I want to point out this statue over here. It's a statue of Adam Clayton Powell, who also this boulevard is named after. Adam Clayton Powell was the first black congressman elected from New York. He had a lot to do with some of the laws that were implemented, the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Are you guys familiar with the Civil Rights Act of 64?
No, not really.
No, okay, well, up until this time, America tried and tried and tried to make things fair for African Americans in this country.
We're talking 1964 or 1864?
1964 was the final Civil Rights Act that was passed. Okay. Prior to that, they'd attempted Civil Rights Acts right after slavery ended in the 1800s, in 1865. Somehow the federal government still allowed the southern states to implement black laws, which became the Jim Crow laws, which made it legal to discriminate in housing, in jobs, in public transportation. This led to the 1950s Montgomery bus boycott. This led to Dr. King stepping forward and leading the civil rights movement in the 1950s. Now, once again, 1860s, the war ends.
Yeah.
100 years later, in the 1960s, we're still fighting for the same freedoms. Adam Clayton Powell introduced a series of laws. Pretty much, he was saying, if you're an institution that promotes slavery, you do not get federal funds. The federal government said, okay, we should look into that, you think? So when he became a congressman, his laws, his ideas were actually put into the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which finally said it was illegal for all states to discriminate in housing and jobs based on race, religion, gender. It was finally put into place. Now, I want to point out, you may have seen in the news some controversies about the Confederate flag and things like that. It's not the first time. The Confederate flag is a battle flag from the Civil War. And what people don't realize is that what we're still fighting about today should never have been an issue. In the 1950s, the first time they tried to forcibly desegregate schools in the South, that's when that flag went up. People had, since the war, pretty much forgotten about that flag. But as a direct opposition to what the federal government was telling the states, South Carolina in particular put the flag up on the state house in the 50s. Now people are saying, oh, it's our southern heritage. It's only your southern heritage.
Yeah.
When you want to cause problems.
Yeah, it's no matter what people claim, that flag, based on the history of how the civil rights movement went, has been reappropriated towards a stance much more heavy towards racism and not towards Southern history and pride.
Right.
And it's important that people know that.
It's important.
You mentioned the 1865 Civil War, which ended slavery. You mentioned 1964 that brought these new laws in. We had a lecture when we first came here from Nicholas Burns from New York University, who said the Civil War has not yet finished.
Yeah.
Well, how do you respond to that?
Like after Adam Clayton Powell got that passed and the Civil Rights Act got passed, it's not like I can sit here now and say, and racism in America is fixed, guys. It's really not.
It's not.
And it's increasingly become a huge issue again, I'm sure, you know.
Well, we hear it on
yeah,
the news.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure the news, you've seen plenty of places, and it's not just America, it's everywhere,
it's
you know.
Australia as well.
It's quite confusing because when you look at some of the issues people talk about that still relate to the Civil War.
Yeah.
The federal government had more power than it used. It had the power to tell the states, yes, you have states' rights, but this is a violation of federal law. You cannot do these things.
Yeah.
A significant reasoning behind why that sort of fell apart after the Civil War was after Abraham Lincoln was shot, they had to bring in Johnson as his vice president. And Johnson, unfortunately, had been brought on the ticket when Abraham Lincoln was running for re-election. He had been brought on the ticket as a way to try and get the Southern vote, and he was much more supportive of the South and sympathetic to the Southerners. And, you know, peace to the guy's memory, but he was quite the bigot himself. And so he really didn't have the same sympathy and sort of abolitionist fervor that Abraham Lincoln had had. So once Lincoln died, unfortunately, and Johnson was put in charge of sort of, Reformation and bringing the country back together after the Civil War, all of those extra ties that could have been tied off so much better in terms of civil rights, in terms of really giving these ex-slaves proper rights and their due, did unfortunately very much fall by the wayside.
And where does the current president sit in that story?
Well, I'm not going to get too political one way or another.
That's a good idea.
But I will say that there was definitely, and tell me if you agree with this or not, there was definitely a national mood in America over the past 8 years where I think a lot of people thought that once we had Barack Obama in office, that racism in America was fixed now and everything was better, especially if you were white, that is what you thought. And then it became clear that there's plenty of things that a lot of us weren't really seeing that was brewing under the surface that came up in a big way and in a very ugly way, unfortunately, both during the election between Hillary Clinton and President Trump, and unfortunately now in the current regime of the country, in terms of bigotry towards different races, black, Hispanic, all that, and especially the anti-immigration movement and anti-Islamic.
The anti-immigration movement, which is not really an anti-immigration movement, it's an anti-Muslim movement.
Yeah.
Let's just be...
I think one of the latest fun controversies that we've had to deal with was the president going on record saying that why would we want to have immigrants coming in from, quote-unquote, these shithole countries, meaning every country where people are brown or black, but then also saying, why can't we get more Norwegians in?
Oh, God.
So, I won't state any particular opinions, but that is that's the particular climate that we're
doing. I think we can all agree that what we have here is a problem with diplomacy.
Yeah.
And a problem with being able to approach issues in a diplomatic fashion.
Yeah.
For example, with the rise of white supremacists in our nation right now, which they've always been there, but they feel they have the ability to be a lot more vocal than they have been in the past couple of decades. In response to some events in the country, he has been recorded as saying, there are good people on both sides.
Yeah.
Which is a strange way of being diplomatic.
Yeah.
Very strange.
One side is fighting for civil liberties, and the other is blatantly bigoted.
And that's caused a lot of the tension to escalate.
Yeah, it's unfortunate when the country's leader, and who is also supposed to be sort of a figurehead and a moral leader of sorts, is allowing groups like white supremacy groups to suddenly have a platform when before they were being dismissed.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. And the fact that he's trying to toe the line and say things like there are good people on both sides is his way of trying to sort of hedge his bets, but unfortunately it's also giving them much more of a voice and power than anybody should have if they're going to be that bigoted and racist. So that's that. What's that?
Very good.
Yeah. How much do you think the state system contributes to that, with your state versus federal? Is that a big factor, do you think? Because your state system versus your federal government.
How much does
the fact that there's... Well, it depends on what party is in power, especially in Congress in America, how much power the federal government is getting or how much power the state governments are getting, because on a basic level, the origins of the conservative and Republican Party versus the Democratic Party is the Democrats tend to want more concentrated federal power and more federal government control. And then Republicans want it to be much more of a backed away government and let individual states and individuals have their freedoms. There's a lot more that is now delineating the two parties, but on a basic idea of the power of government and the organization of government, that's how it tends to work in America.
Which is confusing in our nation's history.
Yeah.
Because it's
Cause they
flopped.
Yeah.
Back in the day, the Republicans were the more conservative. Well, no, not conservative. They were more liberal, and the Democrats were more conservative, and that's completely changed after the 1960s, somehow.
Yeah, it's the parties have definitely evolved over time quite a bit. Like, I'm going to go ahead on the record and say that, you know, Abraham Lincoln ran as a Republican. He was a Republican. I'm going to go ahead and say he'd be a Democrat now.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yes.
Definitely.
Though I think most Republicans really always try to say, like, no, Lincoln was a Republican. You were fine. And I'm like, but it's a little different.
But you've changed, Republican.
You've changed. All right, but kind of moving on from the national mood of our particular country, this is the Hotel Teresa over here. Let's get back to some historical buildings.
This was once called the Waldorf of Harlem. It was built in 1913, and like many things, when it first opened in 1913, it was for whites only. It wasn't until 1940 when a man named Love B. Woods, a businessman, was able to buy it, that he ended the segregation policy and it became integrated. Some of the famous guests from this particular hotel: Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. has stayed here. Zora Neale Hurston has stayed, also stayed here once. You guys familiar with her?
No.
You were telling me some fascinating things about her.
Yeah, so Zora Neale Hurston, probably her most famous book, the one that she's really known for in American literature, is called Their Eyes Were Watching God. Have any of you guys heard of that book?
No.
Really fantastic book. Again, I know you got too much on your class syllabus already, but consider it. It's an amazing book. And it tells the story of a woman, an African-American woman, and just sort of the trials and travails that she goes through in her own life, being married off young, escaping that marriage, moving on towards better things, trying to stand on her own two feet as an independent woman. One of the main sort of plot set pieces of that book is a hurricane in the South. There's a hurricane that the main character survives, even as she sees so many people around her die, and it's this really, really terrible and tragic thing. She's seeing so many different African American, especially black migrant farm workers dying. And Zora Neale Hurston actually, she was inspired in part to write Their Eyes Were Watching God and include that hurricane scene based on an actual hurricane that did take place in the American South. It went through the Caribbean and into Florida. It was called the Okeechobee Hurricane because it hit on land in America in Okeechobee, Florida. And it was a truly devastating storm. It was a Category 5 storm. When people talk about it, it happened in 1928. When people talk about it, they often talk about the devastation that happened to places like Puerto Rico and the Bahamas. It truly laid waste to the Caribbean. However, depending on who you talk to in American history, they'll often say that the hurricane didn't have too many casualties once it hit land in Florida. However, the people that will tell you that usually are white and are trying to whitewash the history a little bit, because what happened was, if you were white, middle class, and were living in a house that was solidly there with a foundation, you were fine. But Okeechobee, Florida, and that whole area around the Gulf at that time was an area where oftentimes these very, very large sort of itinerant camps would be set up with shacks hastily built for black migrant farm workers that were traveling through chasing whatever job they could find. And those black migrant farm workers, many different encampments and many different communities all throughout that area were right there in sort of in the direct path of the storm. And there were huge numbers of casualties, untold, because of course nobody actually took a census to try and count the dead, because they weren't even considered people enough to be counted, that were killed by the hurricane and then in the aftermath due to disease and to poor living conditions. And after the Okeechobee hurricane, the government went in to do some relief efforts, and they made sure to build coffins for all of the white casualties. For all of the white casualties of the storm. However, all of the black migrant farm workers were thrown into mass graves, and there was really never any way to count them or even know the names of the people that died. There have since been memorials put in place for the black victims of the Okeechobee hurricane, but it was a huge, devastating thing, and it was a very major controversy among the civil rights movement that occurred. And so that's what she was covering when she was writing Their Eyes Were Watching God. I was going to say, on a funnier note, the other The other major famous resident of the Hotel Teresa for a time was Fidel Castro. He came in here, he came to America for a United Nations conference, and he was originally staying at this hotel in Midtown called the Shelburne, I think. And he balked at the Shelburne because he showed up and they demanded cash for the entire time that he stayed there because they didn't trust him and they thought that he was going to run out on the bill. And also they thought that his entourage was far too large and too loud. And so he actually, before he tried to check in, couldn't do it, didn't want to, inevitably, and then ran up here to Harlem to the Hotel Teresa, where he thought that everybody was much more welcoming. And sure enough, the Hotel Teresa was very welcoming, and I can see why, because he rented 80 rooms at $800 a night.
Wow.
Yeah, and he paid his bill. And while he was there, he was visited by Malcolm X, Langston Hughes, Allen Ginsberg, a number of local figures, and Nikita Khrushchev, the Russian. The Russian leader. I don't really recall how those talks went, but apparently he had a whale of a time while he was staying at the Hotel Teresa. So, and we can go. All right.